listening to the Triangle Radio Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the May 2019 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Nicole Kidman on the cover. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Now, here's some news from the Vanity Fair agenda. Event: Genesis celebrates Campaign Hollywood. A few short months ago, Genesis once again partnered with Vanity Fair to celebrate Campaign Hollywood. The brand new Genesis 7.0 was prominently featured throughout the week at an exclusive cocktail party celebrating the biopic Bohemian Rhapsody, as well as at the iconic Vanity Fair Oscar party. Celebrities and VIPs were also shuttled in Genesis 9.0 special edition vehicles throughout the week. In the photos, celebrities from the film Bohemian Rhapsody, as well as the 2019 North American Car of the Year. Here's the editor's letter for May 2019 from Editor-in-Chief Radhika Jones. Not all heroes wear capes or makeup. In the photo, Brie Larson and Radhika Jones discuss the superhero we deserve at the Women in the World Summit last month in New York City. The two mothers prominently featured in this issue, Nicole Kidman and Ali Wong, have got me thinking about my own mother. May is the month for it, after all. The oldest of five children, my mother grew up in Mumbai speaking three languages, English, Hindi, and Konkani, but wanted more than anything to study French. So she wrangled herself a scholarship to the University of Fribourg when she was 21. Until she went to Switzerland, she had never worn a coat. From there, she moved to Geneva and then to Paris, without telling her parents, a bit of chutzpah that never ceases to impress me, where she met my Boston-born father and eloped. She hadn't intended to take up residence in the U.S. and raise three American kids, and she held on to her roots in ways that I only later appreciated. I was an adult before I realized that I had never seen my mother in a skirt or a dress, for the simple reason that she elected never to wear them. Whenever the occasion called, she would wear a sari or salwar kameez. Her closest rail, her closet rail, held a rustling row of silk and embroidered cotton and flat leather chapeau. She seldom wore jewelry beyond simple diamond studs and no makeup, only occasionally putting polish on her nails. If she felt any pressure to conform, she didn't bow to it. She was always, to my eye, the most elegant woman in the room by virtue of being an original. We call Ali Wong the Queen Mom in this issue because she is wielding motherhood as a comedic tool and killing it as a result, as Julie Miller writes in her profile. With a comedy special corresponding to each of her two pregnancies, Ali has put the biological realities of a woman's reproductive years center stage, finding a wellspring of humor in a subject that past generations of female comics often sidestepped. It was Ali's idea to dress as Marie Antoinette, a thumb in the eye to the kind of decadent presentation that Ali eschews in her professional life. Please read her bracing views on the ritual of hair and makeup. But also, I suspect, a fun excuse to lie on a chaise longue and be fed grapes while wearing an extravagant wig, because why not? We call Nicole Kidman a shapeshifter because of her remarkable range, both in her life, actor, producer, parent, spouse, resident of Nashville, and staple of the red carpet, and in her cinematic oeuvre. Collier Shore, joining our masthead this month as a contributing photographer, captures these qualities brilliantly in a series of character-driven portraits. Executive West Coast editor Krista Smith wrote the cover story. It's her last piece for Vanity Fair after 30 years with the magazine, and it's fitting that she has returned to Nicole, whom she first met while working on the inaugural Hollywood cover in 1995, the year Kidman made To Die For. In April, I had the pleasure of interviewing Brie Larson at the 10th Women in the World Summit, organized by former Vanity Fair editor-in-chief Tina Brown. As Captain Marvel, Brie has shattered records at the box office, but just as importantly, she's shattering records at the negotiating table. When I ask her about the precedent her fee set for a lead role in a Marvel film, she spoke of advocating for what you're worth. When women talk to me about this, she told me, I say, you know, don't even do it for you. If that makes you feel real reared right now, do it for the women that are going to come after you. Do it for the next one. Do it for the future you. This is paying it forward, literally, and it reminds me of what mothers can do for their daughters, how their choices help us become the women we aspire to be. Now for some of this month's contributors. The Kidman Connection, Collier Shore, Nicole Kidman, shapeshifter. Several years ago, Shore was asked to provide a sketch of Nicole Kidman for German Vogue. So when Shore met Kidman to shoot this month's cover, Shore's first as a Vanity Fair contributing photographer, she felt that she knew the actor in this otherworldly way. That uncanny feeling is captured in Shore's cinematic portraits of Kidman. When we first started shooting, says Shore, Nicole said she was a little shy, and I said, me too. By the end, it was like we were dancing, taking turns leading. I suppose that's why she is such a compelling performer. She has that way of coming close to you and then pulling you close to her. Shore's Paul's book will be published this fall by Mac Books. Krista Smith, Nicole Kidman, Shapeshifter. Over the past 30 years, Smith has written countless Vanity Fair cover stories on silver screen luminaries such as Drew Barrymore, Jude Law, and Nicole Kidman, the last of whom she revisits for her final story for Vanity Fair. Their chilly hike together in Nashville, Smith says, has been added to her long list of surreal experiences on behalf of the magazine, from attending political conventions with Christopher Hitchens to working with the late, great Herb Ritts and the legendary Annie Leibovitz on portfolios, including Vanity Fair's first-ever Hollywood portfolio in 1995, pictured here. From going into Iraq with a USO tour to meeting everyone from Madonna to U.S. presidents, Smith says of her tenure at Vanity Fair, it has been a privilege and an honor. Micheline Thomas, Everlasting Light. Barbara came to the shoot with so much energy, says Thomas, whose portrait of Barbara Hammer is one of the last made of the artist and filmmaker. She was on fire, moving and posing with zest. I could not click the shutter fast enough. Thomas is a recipient of the 2019 Meyerhoff Becker Biennial Commission at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Brian Burrow, Shooting a Tiger. For his epic report about a man-eating tiger, special correspondent Brian Burrow crisscrossed India, a first in his 27 years with Vanity Fair, to interview environmentalists, villagers, and hunters. It's the kind of story that never felt like work, he says. It felt like adventure. Burrow is currently working on a book about gunfighters in the Old West. Rachel Syme, Face Value. If Syme developed her own signature scent a la Michelle Pfeiffer, whose first foray into perfumery she reviews in this month's Vanities section, it would smell like an elegant older woman who buys all her clothes at a museum gift shop, says Syme, a three-time winner of the Perfumed Plume Award for Fragrance Journalism. Gabriel Sherman, Lachlan's Trump Trap. With Donald Trump in the White House, Fox News has never been more powerful or more vulnerable, says the Vanity Fair special correspondent and author of The Loudest Voice in the Room, his best-selling book about the late Fox News CEO Roger Ailes. It's a fascinating time to look at a network whose fate is so tied to the fortunes of the president. A.M. Holmes, Everlasting Light. The acclaimed author found inspiration in the pioneering artist Barbara Hammer, who died in March. In talking about death, Barbara taught me how to live, says Holmes. She was open to whatever the experience might bring. The paperback edition of Holmes' latest book, Days of Awe, will be published in June by Viking. On to the Vanity's opening act. Anthony Ramos speaks with Vanity Fair's Krista Smith. You're fresh off a wild awards season for A Star Is Born, in which you played Lady Gaga's best friend. I didn't know what to expect once we shot that film, but everything just took off like a rocket ship. Bradley Cooper is an incredible director, and learning from him was so valuable to my growth. And this month, you star in the next Godzilla installment. What was your experience during filming? It was a big movie. We shot in Mexico City and Atlanta, and on my first day, they recreated Fenway Park and set up 5 stations for massive explosions like the Universal Studios tram tour. How did you get your start? I always enjoyed singing, trying to imitate John Legend or The Temptations. In high school, there was a competition between the New York public schools, and I thought, oh, I'll go sing a little song. My mom's going to love this. Whatever. I was trying to be cool. I played baseball my whole life, but once I got on stage, I loved it just as much, if not more, than playing ball. The director, Sarah Steinweiss, asked me to read some lines while I was there, and she ultimately changed my life. How so? I was thinking about going into the Navy, but she showed me the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, sat me down to write the essays, and even paid for my application. I got in, and she connected me with Jerry Seinfeld's foundation for a scholarship. Look, I grew up in the projects, single-parent home. I didn't need anybody to feel sorry for me, but I just needed somebody to take a chance on me. Then came your breakthrough roles, playing John Lawrence and Philip Hamilton in the original Broadway cast of Hamilton. What did you learn from performing 8 shows a week? It taught me to power through to do the thing that you've been gifted to do. I'm in the business of service, to entertain, and to make people think. And soon you'll star in the film adaptation of another Lin-Manuel Miranda musical, In the Heights. It was the first Broadway show where I felt like I knew every character. I didn't know if there were roles for me. I'm barely 5'9", but I saw that show and thought, I can do this. What's next? I just wrote my first album. It's pop music, authentic to New York, but I'm super grateful for what's happening to me right now, and I hope that in 10 years, I will be able to do it for somebody else. Fan mail from Bradley Cooper. The sky is the limit for him. He can achieve anything he sets out to do. What Anthony loves. In the illustrations, style icon, Pharrell. Shoes, Adidas Ultra Boost. Go-to accessory, Stone Island cap. Podcast, TED Radio Hour on Spotify. Jeans, All Saints. Whom do you text the most? My fiancé, Jasmine Cephas Jones. Dream dinner party guest, the New York Mets. Now, here's Joanna Robinson with Game of Thrones by the Numbers, HBO's epic fantasy hit and the world's most popular show, has begun its 8th and final season. 47 Emmy wins out of 128 nominations. 466 girls born in the U.S. in 2017 named Khaleesi. 2,339 on-screen deaths in 7 seasons. 2 characters who died of natural causes. 180 million euros injected into Northern Ireland's economy since production began there in 2010. 27,000 price in dollars spent on a life-size Tyrion Lannister cake from a Dubai bakery. 3 weight in pounds of the fake gummy horse heart Emilia Clarke ate in season 1. 17.4 million viewers of the first episode of Season 8, 2.2 million viewers of the first episode in 2011. Moving on to beauty. Face value. Celebrity perfumes have long offered a whiff of fame. Now, in the heyday of wellness, Michelle Pfeiffer gives the category a clean spin. By Rachel Syme. In the photos, Elizabeth Taylor, seen here in the 1948 film A Date with Judy, translated her on-screen magnetism into a series of fragrance blockbusters. And, taking notes, Henry Rose, Jake's House, redolent of rain-soaked leaves, takes inspiration from Michelle Pfeiffer's childhood. In 1991, to promote her second perfume, White Diamonds, the then 59-year-old actress Elizabeth Taylor appeared in a black-and-white television commercial, dripping in jewels. As a group of high-rolling men plays a tense game of poker, Taylor drops one of her heavy diamond earrings into the kitty. "These have always brought me luck," she purrs. The message was clear. White diamonds was the scent of mystery, of opulence, of owning so many baubles that you could simply give them away. Parfum International, Taylor's fragrance partner, celebrated the launch with department store screenings and tiny bags of popcorn. White diamonds was not the first celebrity scent. In 1914, the silent film star Alan Asimova fronted Caswell and Massey's Marim. Audrey Hepburn teamed with Givenchy on the 1957 L'Interdit. Sophia Loren released her eponymous perfume in 1981, but it was by far the most successful, a juggernaut in a bejeweled bottle. A 2010 report stated that White Diamonds earned more than $60 million in that year alone. The scent, an overdose of rose and jasmine with champagne fizzy aldehydes, was an extension of Taylor's appeal, the glamour and inaccessibility of it. She made celebrity perfumes into a viable category because her fame was so outsized she could afford to siphon off a bit of sparkle. In the years since, there have been hits and misses. Britney Spears, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Paris Hilton have built booming fragrance empires, while other stars, Pharrell, Jennifer Aniston, have seen their scents fade on the shelves. A market analysis from 2014 reported a 66% drop in sales of celebrity-branded perfume over the preceding 3 years. So, what is the future of star-powered spritzes? Michelle Pfeiffer thinks she has the answer. The actress, 61, has a new collection of scents called Henry Rose, after her children's middle names. Notably, it is the first high-end perfume line to be certified by the Environmental Working Group, a watchdog organization that monitors toxicity in the beauty industry. We live in a time of moon juice, mindfulness, and self-care, a shift that Pfeiffer sees as antithetical to scents that often contain problematic ingredients. Styrene, for one, is often listed as potentially carcinogenic. Still, when she started developing Henry Rose in 2010, many told her that her idea for sophisticated, chemically safe perfume was impossible. I talked to an agency about wanting to do this, and they looked at me like I had three heads, she recalls. They said celebrity fragrances are in the toilet, nobody trusts them, and that I'd never get anyone to be 100% transparent. Fortunately, Pfeiffer says, the market finally caught up. Henry Rose lists every ingredient plainly on its website. The next hurdle was creating complex scents from a pared-down palette of roughly 300 notes that she and her chemist deemed to be clean. The five fragrances, unisex, though they skew creamy and floral, each reflect an olfactive memory. Torn, a vanilla patchouli typically found on Pfeiffer's wrist, nods to her father's love of Old Spice. Henry Rose is not a bombastic line. The Scarface actress will not be dripping in diamonds anytime soon. But even as pop stars churn out candy floss scents, perhaps this is where celebrity perfume is headed. More passion project than marketing ploy. Here, the famous name isn't in the spotlight. It's not even on the box. Thank you. onto the fairground, masters of this universe. At the Hermes Men's Universe show and after party, London's Culturati experienced a luxe fantasy land by H.W. Vale with photographs by Guy Martin. Veronique Nikanin, artistic director of the Hermes Men's Universe, she's been with the brand for more than 30 years, was the woman of the hour at the multimedia celebration, with her husband, Patrick Bonnet, providing a post-show selfie assist. Actors Benedict Cumberbatch, Gwilym Lee, and Adrian Lester had front-row seats to the latest collection. Benedict Cumberbatch chatted with Hermes CEO Axel Dumas in a transformed warehouse that featured neon art installations, a disco, and a telescopic observatory for viewing the brand's legendary fabrics and motifs. The evening was a testament to the Parisian Maison's vision, classic French luxury with a contemporary edge. Surprise performers, Scottish rockers, Primal Scream. Still more photos, Veronique Nikanin and Patrick Bonnet. Guest watched the presentation of the Hermes Spring-Summer 2019 Men's Collection. Benedict Cumberbatch and Axel Dumas. Bohemian Rhapsody star Gwilym Lee converses over cocktails. A guest busts a move to a performance by Bobby Gillespie from the Scottish rock band Primal Scream. Hikari Yokoyama, Jay Jopling, and Lady Ashley Ajay. Luna de Casanova, Born Aloft by Hermes Models. And still more from the fairground, Broad Strokes, and that's B-R-O-A-D, a play on broad strokes, since the museum in L.A. is called the Broad Museum and is spelled the same way. Art lovers and revelers celebrated the opening of the Soul of a Nation exhibition at the Broad Museum in L.A. by Britt Hennemuth, with photographs by Roger Kisby. Nearly 150 works made between 1963 and 1983 by more than 60 artists, including Romare Bearden, Martin Puryear, and Betty Saar, are on display through September 1st. Jay-Z checked in on a print he had lent to the show, Shine, a 1969 work by David Hammons, as part of his personal collection with Beyoncé. The evening brought out artists, actors, and entertainers, including Sacha Baron Cohen, Isla Fisher, and Courtney B. Vance. After touring the galleries, guests took to a private tent for dinner and dancing. In the photos, Tina Knowles Lawson and Mark Bradford, Angela Bassett and Jay-Z, Eli and Edith Broad. A guest takes a look at the catalog for the traveling exhibition, which made its West Coast debut in L.A., with three additional galleries dedicated to local artists. Guests admire Faith Ringgold's 1967 painting, American People Series, number 18, The Flag is Bleeding, and Party Attire. Thank you. on to what's trending in full bloom. Rough winds may shake the darling buds of May, but in art and fashion they're holding fast. And all of these items are floral. Visit Manet and Modern Beauty at the Art Institute of Chicago. Gild the Daisy, Tiffany and Company Love Bugs Diamond Cluster Necklace in Yellow and White Gold, $30,000, at Tiffany and Company stores nationwide. Build Me Up Buttercup, Fendi Blue Shearling Handbag, $5,990. Blossom Forth, Polo Ralph Lauren Cotton Quilted Blazer, $498. A Springtime Romp, a look from the Dior Men Pre-Fall 2019 collection, which shows a long-sleeved shirt and Bermuda shorts in a floral print. Garden Party, a look from the Valentino Pre-Fall 2019 collection, which shows a long skirt, midi-length skirt, with matching floral cape-like jacket. Fancy Feet, Dior Men High-Top Sneakers, $1,050. Patch It Up Low, Paula's Ibiza Patchwork Pajama Trousers, $2,250. Not Your Grandfather's Lavender Tom Ford, Lavender Extreme Eau de Parfum, $320. No Wallflowers Here, Michael Kors Collection Crushed Crepe de Chine Dress, $2,290. And Climb the Trellis, Christian Louboutin Sandal du Désert in Satin, Floral Print, Ankle Wrap Sandal for $895. A lot of very expensive floral items. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and broadcasting from its Raleigh, North Carolina studios. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.